Welcome to the Buyer's Desk, your weekly resource for all things natural food retail.
This season, we're shaking things up with shorter weekly episodes to fit your busy schedule.
Each month, we dive into SPINS data, explore trends with industry leaders, spotlight emerging brands, and share actionable strategies to help you thrive.
Get ready to explore the world of natural food retail. Welcome back to the Buyer's Desk, where this month we're focusing on leadership. I'm Angela Bozo, and I am thrilled to be joined today by my colleague, Michelle Lampa, the Director of People and Culture at Infra. We actually initially teed this up to be a little bit of a debate, but I'll get into that in a minute. In the meantime, Michelle, how's it going?
It's a good day, Angela. I'm excited to be here.
Excellent. So excited to have you join us. And, you know, initially we did concept this as a why don't we debate about what it means to be a leader in the grocery space. And we were both for it. There was a little bit of a formality about how we were actually going to execute a debate. And then as we actually started to think about some of the points we wanted to make, we decided it might be a better, I don't know, let's say conversation, probably won't be a tense conversation, maybe a little bit more of like a point counterpoint. Does that meet your expectation?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think you and I wanted to go like toe to toe and duke it out over leadership in the grocery space. So yeah, but I think there's some really good points that we both agreed on and that we saw that we could discuss both sides of. And so let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely not off the table for a future episode. I actually, Jim Olson, our data spins guy who makes his appearance on the podcast at least month to month, offered to MC. So if later on we feel like there is another topic, then perhaps we could delve in there. I will tell you, though, part of my concern really with having a debate was both of us feeling like in the spirit of debate, we may say something that we do not personally agree with. And so I just wanted to call it out at the beginning because I actually am going to make a point or a counterpoint today that would not necessarily represent my personal views, but that I think is a thing that we, you know, a few of the points are just things that I acknowledge are part of the industry and a little bit are just counterpoints to try to see if we can like flesh out an argument. So huge caveat at the beginning here. I might say a few things that I do not necessarily personally agree with just to see where the conversation goes. And I don't know how important that is to anybody, but I said it anyway.
Yeah, same. Might get a little spicy. Hopefully not too spicy, but let's give it a go.
Excellent. Michelle, I believe that the floor is yours.
Yeah. So I want to start off by saying I have been like waxing poetic about leadership for like the last month after you and I talked about doing a debate. And I think what my main point really comes down to is that leadership is about people. There is all kinds of elements that people feel leadership is. It can be attributes, it can be experience, it can be expertise, it can be values and beliefs. But really what it comes down to is that leaders aren't leading a business. A business is a function. Leaders are leading the people in the business. And I think people are people, and that makes leadership leadership. And there may be like one or two things that is a different flavor in the grocery industry, to use a really cool term there. But for the most part, I think it's really consistent across any situation that involves people, if you take it all the way up to the psychological level of what leadership is. So I don't think it's unique in grocery in that way, in that element. Do you?
I'm going to take the point that I do feel that grocery leadership is unique. I think that grocery is a very specific industry, one that people make conscious choices to be a part of for all kinds of reasons. But one that really, you know, as we were thinking about this, and I was thinking about taking this counterpoint that basically is you must grow up in grocery in order to be a successful grocery leader, that there are a few things about our industry that I would consider to be unique. One, grocery really values the I grew up here story, the story that is I used to run carts, bag groceries, work on the floor, which is a term that I think is pertinent to this conversation by and large, right? You have the people that actually work in the stores that are responsible for really all of most of the income that is coming into a grocer. These are the staff that you see when you shop the store. I'm going to use that as on the floor. And then you have people that are removed from being on the floor that I would consider more of a leadership tier. You know, there's a few levels above that, depending on how you look at it. But for the point of this conversation, leadership is leadership. So we love the story that is, I grew up on the floor. I ran carts, I bagged groceries, I was a cashier straight out of college, maybe straight out of high school. We might like high school a little bit better in that narrative, actually. And I worked my way up. I gave myself exposure to all of the different departments in the store. I was a store manager for a while. Then maybe I was a GM. Then maybe I did this other thing. Feel that it is important to call out that narrative because I think it reinforces the argument that grocery is insular, that we like our own, that there's a piece of growing up in grocery that is understanding grocery that is, you know, I don't know, like let's even just talk about acronyms in grocery, right? This is something that we talk about all the time at Infra. That's ironic, I know. But I feel like, I feel like even the grocery acronym proposition, the number of things that we just say to one another kind of reinforces that grocery is this insular industry. It stands alone. We like our own. We like to use acronyms with our own. We like it when you grew up on the floor and got some amount of exposure. And all of that to say that the people that you're referencing that this, you know, theoretical leader is leading need to have some amount of buy-in and that buy-in comes from this grocery narrative.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I agree with you, actually. I think I love that this industry does promote people that show attributes and loyalty to this being a career. I love that. And I actually think that that is because leadership is within people. And what you're actually referring to, what I'm picking up on, is the expertise piece, right? Like, do you know what this acronym or that acronym means? And that's where industries can become insular. But that's really no different than a leader that has learned the expertise of healthcare, where that is all about people. It is about providing a service. It is about serving their patients. And in this case, we're talking about serving our customers. Where I would say in 24 years of recruiting that those attributes and that intentionality, if someone came from healthcare and said, I desperately want to work in the natural foods industry, I do not feel that our members or most business leaders would be like, nah, I don't want you. You don't get it. You know what I mean? I think there is the gauge in that case is when it comes to expertise and knowledge, what's the runway? How long is it going to take for this person to learn this thing? And what I love about the example that you're giving is that we had the longer runway of how will this person show up as a leader, the attributes and the experience in that place. We've just had a longer runway to see those things from those people. So breaking into our industry as a leader that could very reasonably learn a lot of the acronyms, and I'm using myself as the example of like, yep, that is a learning curve. However, it's something that can be addressed. It's no different than engineering. It's just how high is the bar to say you must be this tall to get into this industry. Otherwise, you are not welcome as a leader and you will not be respected as a leader because people don't think that you understand what it takes. So I do agree with you on that. I don't think it's insurmountable. And I think that it is, you know, missing some opportunities to bring in really great people that would potentially change the game for a lot of our members to say like, hey, I believe in this person. I think they can lead in our company hierarchical position-wise, because we're talking about management or leadership kind of synonymously in this conversation. But, you know, Adam Stark, I love this example. He has told me it's okay to talk about this. He loves to look for people that have been a chaplain in other roles. And he loves their ability to translate that service, that guidance, that coaching onto his team. And he knows the runway is going to be long, but he believes in the leadership more than the runway for the expertise. Sometimes, as long as he has a balance on the team and as long as he's willing to be in it. So I think that's a really great example of like, it's transferable.
Well, I love that you brought up service as a piece of what this could look like. I mean, you know, outside of the realm of like what it really means to be a leader in service or service leadership style and that piece, there is a piece of the grocery industry that is also unique. And I think you and I maybe had a little bit of conversation about this, and I feel like it's worth fleshing out. Grocery is absolutely vital. Like, it is a vital industry. It is a, like, everyone's got to eat, right? And everyone's got to figure out a way to take this, like, mythic supply chain of food and, like, figure out a way to actually get it into people's homes. You know, we've seen numerous iterations. They tend to ebb and flow in grocery of, like, you know, distributors doing direct sales to consumers and even just, like, online grocery delivery in general, right? You look at post-pandemic and what really, like, sustained in the industry was really more like a, you order online, but you still have to physically come to the store and pick this up in terms of the way that that worked out. You still had an enormous amount of consumers that wanted to go into the store and touch their produce and point to their meat and the type of things that really just never translated online. And all of that to say that because it is such a vital industry and because we both agree that it is an insular industry, there was a piece of this like leadership conversation that was, why do we feel like it is really challenging to then bring people in to this industry? Why is it really hard to think about the even on the floor jobs as career paths? You know, and without totally digressing into some like, well, the American argument, you know, like we feel the same way in other service professions, you know, like in Europe, you could be a professional waitstaff person and that's totally legit. You can be awesome at your job and capital C career, have at you. But there is like this very specific, I think, perception that like grocery is not a career. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think there is that perception out there. And it boggles my mind because I see what it takes when I talk to our members. I see what it takes when I discuss, you know, even with my son, his first job was being a stocker at Lunds and Byerly's. I talked to him about like what it takes to do that job, and it's not easy. And so the piece of, oh, well, grocery is not a career kind of breaks my heart a little bit, if I'm being honest, because you're right. It's vital. It is a connection point. It is all of these things. I wonder on this point, as we're talking about leadership and management, I wonder if the idea of it being a career is something that really comes down to the sacrifice that some of it takes in that industry. Right? It takes a lot of generosity of your time, generosity of your spirit, generosity of meeting people where they are and going through things with them. And I admire that sacrifice. And I really admire our members for the tenacity that they have to make this their vision and their purpose. And there are a lot of trade-offs for staff that it's not their own store. So they may not have that much buy-in. And so therefore, it doesn't feel as fulfilling from a purpose perspective for the trade-off of the sacrifice of their weekends or needing to be in store and they miss a dance recital or something like that. And, you know, smiling all day is tiring sometimes.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. All day, every day customer service is very challenging.
Yep. Yeah. So I think that's part of what you're getting at. So to go back to your point about the like, we love the promote from within. If you've been smiling all day, every day for 10 years, you're like, all right, you've got it.
you get it.
You can be a leader. You've proven it.
Yeah, well, I feel like, though, it's hard to have the conversation without thinking about. So you have grocery that really believes it's insular, that we want you to grow up from the floor. We want you to, like, know all the acronyms. We want you to, on some level, have some amount of passion about feeding people. And so internal, right? And then external, I think you have this perception that this isn't a career. Oh, the grocery store, that's just, you know, to your point, that's where you get your kid's first job stocking groceries. And then that kid's going to go up and go and do something else. And I think that honestly, those when I was really framing this conversation, those two things are competitive in a strange way. And they, I guess, create this like third narrative that is like, what does it mean to be a leader in the grocery space? You know, like from the outside, do you worry about like perception of what that career is? And from the inside, are we just like narrowing the field so dramatically because we feel so unique. And I think anyone that's listened to this podcast knows I do this where I'm like, I don't really have a question. I'm just laying this out like this to say these were really, I'd never sat down and thought like, these are the two things, internal and external perception wise, that I think makes this doubly challenging.
Yeah. You know, what I love about that is that I have spoken to people in grocery, our members or otherwise, that there is a way to bypass that belief, the insular belief. And that is, if you are a strong enough, long-term enough customer to prove that you are aligned with the purpose and intention of natural foods, then you can be a leader in the space. Then you can learn the things. So this actually goes back to my initial point of being, if you are value aligned in this industry, I think the gate of expertise is much lower. And that actually, in my opinion, proves my point that leadership is leadership as long as it's being done in the right value aligned place. We're obviously not going to want to bring people in that have been working, let's say, in a really restrictive industry or in the military that is all about like checks and balances, and it's all about staying in your lane, and is all, you know, there's a lot of things there that are difficult to translate. But what I will say is that I think the more difficult thing, other than purpose, is the fact that in our member stores and in a lot of grocery, actually, I don't think it's unique to our member stores, these people have to be all things. They have to have attributes, they have to have experience, they have to have expertise, they have to have values and beliefs, and they have to switch on a dime in any moment to be anything. And I think that is the unique piece of what it takes to be a leader in this industry, is that amount of flexibility, because margins are thin, because people are in and out that day, because there are a lot of obstacles or boundaries that come to making this business run well. But I don't think this business model is so unique that it can't have transferable skills from similar business models in capitalism, if we just want to say it like that. You know, going back to your point about being a server in Europe, you know, if it's going to be this way, you run a business, you've got some people, you're value aligned, you're a leader, go get them, tiger. Like, that I feel is consistent and not terribly unique. To wrap up my little moment here, I work in this industry because I think the industry is unique. I think what we do for people and what we do for the planet and how we do things is unique and meaningful and purposeful to me. So the sacrifices that I may or may not have to make, which are not the same as the folks in store, matter enough to me that I will be here. That is what creates respect between people, is those shared values. And that is not a leadership trait. That is intentionality.
I mean, I love that. And I definitely personally feel the same way. You know, I mean, we started this conversation talking about grocery in general. And I love that we actually narrowed it now to really talk about natural food grocery. Because whereas grocery has a lot of challenges, and a lot of them too are around value and budget, and again, what it means to be a grocer, we take that even a step further, adding this natural component, where it's like, we pretty much, by and large, our member stores know that they are never going to be the cheapest in town. We pretty much know that we are looking for consumers to, at some level, redefine what value means to them outside of a specific dollar amount, which is a very high bar. And as you were talking as well, as I'm agreeing with you in this like debate where I think both of us have gone back and forth, being like, no, that's right. That's, you know, but definitely some interesting points. You know, I was thinking about, I worked for a grocer for a very long time that went through a very big period of growth, from very small to a lot larger. And during that period of growth, you know, we attracted a lot of really strong grocery executives from other grocers. And I would tell you that, like, it's not that that was the smoothest transition always for people too. I mean, I just to really grossly oversimplify this, there were definitely instances of having someone be like, oh, wait, that's not how you do that. And then our response was, well, we know that's how the industry does it. We consciously made this different decision to do it this way. So it's like, even coming into a situation where you feel like your grocery toolkit is really robust, depending on how unique that grocer wants to be, which, you know, on some levels, in order to attract customer attention now, we're all talking about differentiation. like that in and of itself actually was a little bit of a a con, because you had to then acknowledge there's this industry standard. Now, are you confused or are you subverting it? Which is a very awkward conversation to have, especially as a new leader, right? So definitely, I think that boils down to say pros and cons. You know, your industry experience can be really valuable, and your industry experience can, I think, sometimes get in the way of real innovation and change. Because again, in this insular piece of being like, nope, that's the way we do it. Razor thin margins. We're committed to that, right, everybody? Well, I don't know about you, but I feel like growing up, I remember being like, you know, grocers only make one penny on every can that comes out of a grocery store. And I have no idea where I got that. And definitely grew up to be like, oh, I guess it's a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, so to your point of executives coming in, I also thought about one other point, and that is, I think the smaller the team, the shorter the runway we have availability to teach about expertise, right?
100%.
Like, I just don't have time to duplicate a role. I don't have time, budget, or wherewithal in whatever way to have this much duplication. And I think, you know, when I was thinking about the, you know, some of the bigger box competitors and those things, they have these huge leadership training programs that switch people through different departments, and they do all of these things, and they have the luxury of doing that. And I'm honestly sometimes not even sure why they do it, because then they'll bring someone in from the outside and go over the top of people in some instances. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm saying it's, you know, it is real. So I believe that the smaller the team, the less luxury we have to get around that edge. It's been like that in the other industries that I've worked in also, though. So
yeah,
that may come down to operating model and what's possible and the level of service that's expected in the amount of time that we have. So if we can invest in people, I know that we do. I have seen it many times. If we can't invest in people, then, you know, I guess it depends on the level of investment and if that's time or if that's like straight up dollars right away out of the gate that could be used in a more meaningful way. I think our members are, and our industry is just really intentional about who they invite and how they use their funds and where they give their attention, like you were saying, and that's what brings people to them.
Well, and that intentionality, whereas it can feel very well placed, can also make a field feel smaller than maybe it actually is.
Yeah,
I agree about the small team thing. And I also agree that there are operations that have a lot of complexity and a lot of operations that are pretty stripped down. You know, like going back to my argument about this kind of like, where are we going with like online grocery delivery? I think that the grocery tech piece kind of ebbs and flows as well. You know, like in COVID, I think a lot of people said things like years and years of grocery tech all got condensed into this 6-month period just to support people. And I think now we're on the other side of that, wondering what technological contracts we'd like to maintain, what actually makes sense. I can't tell you the number of conversations I have where we talk about systems integrating and like, you know, does that create an efficiency or are we just training more people to do a thing? So I think as this, like, as we're answering the question, how much technology does a grocery store need, want, desire, acknowledge, any of those things? I think that also adds an element of complexity to large and small teams, wherein if you were really bringing someone in to be like, look at all these systems and what should we do? Gosh, I do actually hope that they have some amount of industry expertise to help you untangle that. And at the same time, I think that, you know, there are probably people that are systems people that even outside of grocery were probably able to, what you call the learning curve. How do you navigate a learning curve?
Well, to go back to your point, to go back to the point of the industry going through changes, I think I took away two things from what you were saying there. One is there are some new things that need to be learned in an industry that both moves at the speed of light and holds on to tradition in a big way. And those two things conflict in those moments. And I actually do believe that bringing in some expertise in a different mindset may actually give our members a competitive advantage, or anybody in a insulated industry, bringing in a different mindset might help. It honestly might simplify things in a, well, like, I don't understand why you have 12 systems to do this. Why don't you try one? Like, what would happen? And asking that question as a newbie in almost every instance can lead to some really cool breakthroughs. The other thing I think we learned from COVID is that we crave human connection in a way that cannot be replaced by technology. And I think we can leave that to some of the tech-driven grocery competitors that are out there, that if they just want drones that show up, drones as people or robots, you know, actual drones in some cases, but if they just want a warm body, that is not going to be a connected experience. And that is not going to take the same kind of leader that it takes to lead a human connected environment, because that is much harder. You know, Angela, I started my college career as a chemistry major. I loved it. I still love it. I was like, oh, this isn't hard enough. I'm going to go do people. And here I am, like, talking about the complexities of people and needs and business all in the same discussion. And I really think that's all this comes down to. It's my initial argument that people are people, and leadership, as long as it's matched with the intentionality and purpose, can come from anywhere. As long as we're willing to open our minds a little bit and open our investment a little bit, maybe it won't take as long as we think. I'm going to give you that. I did have a barrier as I entered this industry of, like, you don't get it. And they were right. I didn't get it. I acknowledged that I wanted to learn. And I think the acknowledgement that I wanted to learn broke down that wall a little bit. And then the more that I earned the respect of, like, okay, yeah, I understand because you are telling me and I believe you and I respect you. Am I standing in the store right now? No. Do I have a lot of knowledge about HR? Yes, let's put those two things together and see if we can come up with the best solution. And that has resulted in really, really great solutions. So I'm not saying, like, oh, I'm the example, leaders can come from anywhere. But I am saying that sometimes bringing in outside expertise can create a greater overall result.
I think it's interesting that it just now struck me that not only were you and I sort of taking these different views, but that they also reflect our personal path. I grew up at the grocery store, like, you know, 22 years old, like, decided that I was going to do this thing at that moment and ended up turning it into a career. And you came from an alternate industry into this industry and felt it. But then I would also say, you know, persevered. So, yeah, I'm going to give you this point counterpoint conversation.
Yes, thank you. I mean, I'm using myself as an example, but again, it's a lot of recruiting. It's a lot of seeing when people can make a shift from one place to another. And there are instances where it works and there are instances where it doesn't, you know? And I do think that that comes down to investment and time.
Well, yeah, all of that to say, should the actual debate have been like, are there any hard and fast capital R rules about leadership? And the answer is likely capital N, no.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is, like, have you physically harmed someone? No. Great.
Yeah, 100%. Although maybe you could make the argument that, like, it is the there is a people-centric part in modern leadership and management that is, like, a huge component. But I think we did a nice job here highlighting some of the complexities of this argument, at least having a bit of levity about how some of these things could go down. And I mean, for me personally, like, you know, finding a couple of ways to make an argument and think about both internal and external perceptions that I think are very valuable. Now, Michelle, when I asked you to come on this podcast and talk to me about leadership, I guess fight with me at first, but then talk to me, was there anything at all that you wanted to make sure we chatted about that we did not get to in our conversation today?
I think the one thing that I would love to talk about is finding your leadership voice. We recently had an intern ask about, how do you find your leadership voice? And I was really struck by the thoughtfulness of that question. Her name is Grace. We love her. And I decided that I was going to give her, like, point counterpoint books right? So I gave her Good to Great by Collins, and I gave her Work Like a Boss by Nancy Lyons, who is a CEO that I have worked for, is an incredible leader, is a transformative leader. I believe Nancy Lyons could be a leader in any industry. She chooses to work in technology. That is where her expertise is. However, she has started to pivot her career to being a speaker and a coach for other people who want to find their leadership voice. So as we talk about this, I actually would love to address the, how do people get over that hump and make this a career when they're working and doing their job within the constraints that their job is supposed to be done? So how do people find their voice in the leadership industry? And that's my question, or in the grocery industry. How do people find their voice in the grocery industry? And is that unique in your opinion?
Yes. I mean, yes, I think it is, because I think that there are layers upon layers of what it means to work in grocery that need to be part of that voice. You know, you don't have to be passionate about food. You don't have to be passionate about customer service. You don't necessarily have to be passionate about fill in the blank, but there needs to be, I think there needs to be at least one. There needs to be at least one little root that is like keeping you in this industry that is, you know, that has its challenges, that has its insular thinking, that has its razor thin margins. I think you need some amount of, passion feels cheesy, like value alignment. I think you have to find a spot where you do feel value aligned and motivated to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. I agree with that. The one thing I might call out is that within the industry, leadership, at least within our membership, for the most part, they are looking for collaborative, coaching, guiding leadership in a connective way more than other industries. So I do feel that is there. They also need to have, like we talked about earlier, they need to have all of the, like, how am I a leader? How am I a business manager? How do I keep my team running? How do I make sure that inventory is appropriate? Like, how do I do all of these things? And if that context switching and complexity of thought is what we're talking about here, that is a piece of it. But I think there is a softness that is expected in leadership, or at least a, maybe not softness, but authenticity and connectivity to people that is undeniable here and is easier to deny when you are not directly in front of customers that are there to take care of their health, that are there to eat food for sustenance. So I agree with you. And, you know, your leadership voice is your leadership voice. You and I have very different ways that we show up in that place, and that can be used or not used in different situations. And hopefully we've learned to be more flexible with that. But I wouldn't work for certain organizations or certain industries because I absolutely do not want to do it in that way. Right. So I think that comes down to intentionality, like you're saying. But
right,
would I change my leadership voice in that instance? No. Could I change their business if they allowed me to take a different approach? Yes. So if our members want something to change in a way, the easiest way to do that, and maybe not easiest, probably hardest, but the fastest way to do that is to insert a different human and watch things rapidly change and work through the change management of that. And that's that trade-off moment of, okay, if I insert different leadership style here, what happens to my business? Maybe it gets better, maybe it gets worse, maybe it's long-term or short-term. Our members, at least, are huge risk takers. So I think if it's going to happen anywhere, it's going to happen here. When it comes to this industry, I am also feeling quite protective. I feel like I have found something that is really special and unique and aligned for me. And so I really also understand the desire to keep this a special place and invite people in that enhance and align with this special place. And so while I am saying we have the opportunity to expand our horizons a little bit and bring in people that may enhance our members or our industry overall, I also, as I'm saying it, I'm feeling very protective of, like, yeah, but make them good ones. You know,
I did.
So I want to make sure that that's clear as I'm making this point, that I do think it's possible. And also, I do really deeply understand the desire to keep this a special place.
Maybe take a lowercase r risk when we're thinking about a particular personality.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Maybe not a big one. You know, that there's some folks that I'd be like, woof, please exit. So I don't think that we need to go that far.
I love that. I also feel very protective of the space, which was why there was a million caveats at the beginning of this conversation. Michelle, I actually think that was the perfect closing, because I actually think that on a lot of levels, what it really boiled down to right there is leadership is very important. It can absolutely affect change. It can set the culture and tone of an organization. It can lead things forward or unfortunately make things regress. So it is definitely a worthy topic of conversation as we're thinking about really any aspect of the grocery business. I so appreciate you joining me today. And I know that we can probably think of some other point, counterpoint we could make happen sometime in the future. Stay tuned for our next episode of The Buyer's Desk, where Chris Sorensen will be talking to Jen from Plucky about leadership training in the grocery industry. And I bet they actually tackle a few of the things that we brought up today about, you know, leadership in other industry spaces. Thanks so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hi everyone, I'm Haley Craig, Events and Education Specialist here at Infra.
And I'm Madeline Ware, Marketing and Communications Specialist.
This month, we're chatting with Mark Squires, owner of Good Earth Natural Foods.
As a pioneer in the non-GMO movement and an OG natural foods enthusiast, Mark gives insight into how he prioritizes sustainability in store and keeps the original spirit of the natural foods movement alive in his day-to-day business practices.
Here's a sneak preview of our episode with Good Earth.
More than anything else, the reason that we became Infra members pretty early on was because we really do feel like, you know, in sharing information and unity, you know, we strengthen all our voices. And that is such a critical part of what we do in Infra. And, you know, not to mention the economic power that we wield.
We can't wait to share these conversations with you. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
As we wrap up this episode of The Buyer's Desk, we'd like to extend our heartfelt thanks to the incredible Infra staff, contributors, dedicated independent retailers, and visionary natural food brands and business partners that made this episode possible.
Stay tuned for more inspiring insights and stories in the world of natural food retail. Until next time, thank you for your support. Angela Bozo, co-host and administrator.
Chris Sorensen, co-host and producer.
Kim Rauch, executive producer and segment contributor.
Jim Olson, Spins segment manager.
Austin Hinkle, audio engineer.
Sarah Super, wellness strategist.
Madeline Ware, marketing writer, editor, and digital manager.
Haley Craig, audio engineer and segment contributor.
Raina Kittredge, segment contributor.
Bella Sislo, outreach manager and segment contributor.